Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, here to help you build and rewire your fitness mindset. I'm not sure I sound totally different on today's episode. You can probably tell from my voice. I've got a cold. I've been battling a cold for the last few days and I very rarely get sick. But I think it's just all the sugar and etc. over Christmas. That is just my body's rebounding back the other way. So I sound like, if you ever listened to that episode of Friends, where Phoebe's voice goes like really coldy, and she's like, oh, I've got a sexy voice. I don't think my voice is sexy at all. But that's how I feel when I'm speaking. I'm like, this doesn't sound like my normal voice. So that is the introduction. And also, today's episode is like that. So if you're wondering why I sound weird, that's why. It has nothing to do with your device. It has nothing to do with your headphones. It has nothing to do with the mic. It is that my body is rebelling against itself and this is how I sound now. So today's episode, Steve Griffin, Steve's weight loss journey on Instagram. Keeping with the trend from last week where I had Trisha Lewis and Paul Dermody talking about New Year weight loss special, keeping that trend this week with my guest, Steve Griffin, who we actually mentioned in that episode. So Steve is a client or has been a client of last week's guest, Paul Dermody, and is someone that we mention frequently on podcasts because of a combination of friendship and someone that I talk to on a regular basis. He is an incredible story and someone that is a walking embodiment of, I've made the decision to lose weight, now I'm just waiting for reality to catch up. And in today's episode, we talk about all the stories, the mindset changes, the actual protocols that Steve has implemented to go from, I actually need to pull up his stats because I literally don't have his stats in front of me and I normally have everything in front of me and I just totally forgot today because one of those days. He started his journey on the first week of September in 2018, where he was 340 pounds, so 155 kilos. And 8 months later, he got down to 106 kilos, so 234 pounds, losing 106 pounds in less than 8 months. And he lost it by tracking his calories, not overcomplicating his food, and walking more. That's literally the changes he made. He had optional workouts in the gym, but he didn't actually use them that often because once he hit his 10,000 step count and he tracked his calories to make sure he was in a deficit, he lost 100 pounds over 8 months. And one of the most eye-opening sections of today's podcast that I'll pull out is that he eats more or less the same food now as he did when he was 340 pounds. It's just that he eats significantly less of it because it's all about getting into a calorie deficit. So if you're struggling with weight loss, be it 50 pounds, 100 pounds or more, this may be an approach that is worth considering. A high end of genius and simplicity when it comes to just tracking your basic calorie intake, eating whatever you want, but making sure you stay in a deficit and just hitting your step count every day, not focusing on a fad diet, not focusing on anything about a training program and going the best training program in the world or overcomplicating anything. Keeping it simple by setting a target of 2,000 calories. You can eat whatever you want as long as it's only 2,000 calories and hitting 10,000 step count every day. So in between, we talk things like skipping breakfast, about the myths and misconceptions around weight loss and fat loss, and the mindset that it takes that Steve calls old Steve versus new Steve. So much value in today's episode. I hope you enjoyed as much as I enjoyed recording it. Without further ado, here is today's episode, Steve's weight loss, losing over 100 pounds in 8 months. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted today to be joined by my guest, Steve Griffin. Some of you will recognize Steve's name because we're regularly mentioning him on the podcast with episodes such as the random episode with Paul Dermody, because Paul is your trainer or was your trainer and helped you on your journey, and Trisha Transformation, because you come up in a lot of those conversations too. Steve, welcome to the podcast.
Hey Brian, how are you keeping?
Tell everybody listening a little bit about your backstory. I've covered a separate introduction talking about everything we're covering today, but tell us about your backstory and just kind of what set you up on your weight loss journey from the beginning to kind of where you are now. Take us through that snapshot, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, I always hate doing these things. It always feels like I'm, you know, on some sort of weird blind date with a load of people, and I'm trying to sell myself as good as I can. Look, basically, I'm nearly 29. In my early 20s, I got a little bit fit. I was in pretty good condition because I had to pass a physical to get in to my job. I'm a member of the Guards. And I got pretty fit that time. But then a lot of things changed in my life. My work schedule changed. I moved away from home. And just bit by bit over the course of a couple of years, I started to gain weight. I stopped playing sports, which was a huge part of it, I think. And then all of a sudden, it just seemed to, the last bit seemed to happen so fast. I seemed to gain a lot of weight really, really fast. And that kind of came to a head in September 2018, when I tipped the scales at about 155 kilos.
Which is about 340 pounds for people listening.
Yeah, so I was actually in Lanzarote on a sun holiday and went shopping, did the touristy thing, went to the local shopping center, bought a brand new t-shirt, thought it was the shit. And then that evening, big family dinner before we went away, and took a load of pictures. But you know when you hold the shutter button and it takes like 20 pictures? I was flicking through them trying to find the, you know, the best one. And I kind of looked and I went, I'm actually spilling out of a brand new t-shirt. Like, that shouldn't happen. You know, I bought this, I tried it on, I didn't think it was that bad. But obviously after chips and dips and whatever else I ate that day, because, you know, there was a lot, I was just spilling out of it. And I went, what the fuck has happened? And that was the first time I actually saw myself as really, really overweight. I knew I wasn't skinny, but I never thought I was that overweight.
When was that? What period, places in terms of the timeline, the year, etc.?
That was the last week of August 2018. And that's exactly when I messaged Paul. I messaged him from a sun lounger in Lanzarote whilst he was in Spain. And it was like the cringiest. I was like, I just have to start a conversation because I worked with Paul years ago. And I was like,
yeah,
I just
had the nightclub scene, wasn't it?
Yeah, we were both bouncers. We were like 20 or 19 or 20. And we worked together for a couple of years. But I hadn't seen him in a while. I knew he was off gallivanting. And I was like, I just have to start the conversation. Because I had kind of messaged him on and off, asking stupid things like, you know, if I put coconut oil in my coffee there, is it good for me? And he's like, what's good? You know, like, and it was just little things like that. But this time I knew I needed a lot more than just a yes, no, maybe kind of answer. And I think I texted him going, so Spanish coffee is brilliant. And that's exactly how the conversation started. And like a week later, we teamed up as trainer and trainee, I guess.
Talk us through what happened over the next 8 months. And then I'm going to delve into so many topics because there's so many things I want to cover with you. Talk us through getting to your peak, and then we'll bring it back a little bit to current because now it's obviously January after November and December. But talk us through 8 months later where you peaked at.
Yeah, so teamed up with Paul, started just doing the real simple stuff, but started to do the simple stuff better. Started tracking calories, moving a bit, actually training with a bit of purpose rather than just lifting, you know, like 100 or 150, 200 kilos off the ground as a deadlift once because I thought I was great. And just over the course of time, you know, I could see a change, which helped so much because when you can see it, you're kind of going, this is actually working. You know, and I was enjoying it, which was even better. And just over the few months, it was brilliant. And admittedly, I did take it kind of aggressive.
You have quite of an all-in extreme personality. I think yeah, that's what we've connected on before.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been able to kind of half-ass this because there was something different. And to this day, I can't quite put my finger on it. But I knew when I'd started this with Paul, I don't know, was the simplicity of it. Was it the fact that I had him watching me every day and looking at my food, my steps, my training? I don't know what it was, but the mindset changed. And I was like, no, this is it. This is going to happen this time. There's no 3 weeks of chicken and broccoli and then going, oh, fuck this.
Is that what you did before?
Yeah. I tried everything. I don't know. I just tried as a loose phrase. I gave everything a bit of a notion. So I had like, I remember buying like these shake things, powder shakes. And it was like, drink 3 of these a day and have a snack bar if you want. I think the 3 shakes altogether were like 900 calories. And did maybe 4 days. Started getting headaches. I was tired. I was like, nope, wheelieman, gone. And I was like, I cannot do this. And that was just a disaster because you look at yourself and you go, oh, what's wrong with me? Other people obviously do this. Other people drink shakes and lose weight. What's wrong with me? And you go to the freezer, you get the Ben and Jerry's, you get the pizza from delivered. and it's just like a vicious cycle, you know. But a couple of months on, it was all working great, and yeah, about 8 months in ish, eight and a half, I had gone down to about 106 kilos, so I'd lost over the 100 pounds.
Yeah, it's 106 pounds.
Yeah, something like that. My maths not great, but in or around that, yeah.
And you're kind of fluctuating around that 115 at the minute, but yeah, after November, December, and then one of the things I love, and we might get into this later, and I talk about this a lot with Trisha Lewis and Trisha's transformation as well, is it's not a linear process of weight reduces. It's up, down, because that's what happens with life. Like, you're probably going to diet harder in January than you are in December. Like, that's just the nature of the beast. But talk me through, we mentioned a few things there, tracking your steps, training, and you also talked about having tried everything a little bit. What were the main contributing factors? Because a lot of people lose 100 pounds on shake diets. A lot of people lose 100 pounds on bar diets. I'm like, if you eat 900 calories and you stick with that for 8 months, yeah, you'll 100% lose probably 100 pounds. You're not going to keep it off. Like, you get down regulation of hormones. Like, you've no behavioral patterns aren't going to be effective for long-term strategy with losing weight. It's the quick fix. Eat a massive calorie deficit, massively restrict your calories with shakes and bars, do it for 6 or 8 months and you'll lose weight, but people rebound back. You, from what I know of you, are probably never ever going to rebound back unless something drastic happens in life, because not only have you got your mindset right, but you didn't lose it that way. You lost it by tracking steps, you lost it by training, you lost it by certain food choices and food nearly rewiring the way you see food. Talk me through those 8 months. What were the biggest contributing factors for somebody listening to this that is 300 pounds or wants to lose weight, and they think that the bar, the shake, the extreme calorie restriction, or whatever it is, that's what they're thinking of going to. What did you do that was sustainable over those 8 months that is obviously still serving you to this day? Talk us through that a little bit.
Yeah, I think that, you know, a lot of people, and I did for a long time, think that losing weight has to be this really complex, you know, programs and meal plans, and that it has to be really difficult for some reason. And I'm going to put myself out there for, you know, slagging here, but weight loss in itself isn't an overly complex concept. You know, you burn more calories than you're taking into your body. What you do and how you do it is different. You know, that might get, you know, different. Like, your training, my training could be totally different. You could have complex types of trainings. I don't have to do that. I could walk around a gym for an hour with dumbbells in each hand in circles, burning a hole in the mats. I'd still burn calories. I think that the knowledge part of it was huge for me. You know, I have to be very honest, and Paul imparted a lot of knowledge on me early on.
Yeah, he's genius in simplicity, is his approach.
That's exactly. He's so... just the way he puts things across is just, it's so simple, but you take it on board, and you can do what you want with it. Then you can go and research more. Like, I started listening to more books and stuff, and started, like, say, re-listening to a lot of your stuff, a lot of his stuff, because it actually meant something to me now, whereas I would have listened before and not taken it in. This time I was actually hearing it. But yeah, it was just simple food choices, learning that I can actually eat the stuff that I enjoyed. Because every other time I was totally getting rid of it. I couldn't have pizza. I couldn't have bread. I love bread. I love toast. I love scones. Every other time I was like, nah, can't have it. That's bad. Never questioned why. Just took it on face value because somebody said so.
I don't mean to kind of cut you off on that, but I'm very curious. Why did you think that? Because was that just down to an education thing?
Yeah, completely.
Because there is no good or bad food. There's good or bad diets. Yeah, like,
completely. And I just... you hear people say white bread is bad. Yeah. And for years and years and years, I never said, you know, why? What is it specifically about it that makes it bad? And what's bad? I mean, the absence of good, what's good, absence of bad. It doesn't really make sense without a lot of context. And when you have a grandmother like me that makes unbelievable scones, being told that white bread is bad, you're just not going to like the person that says it, because you're going to eat it anyways. It's like a personal insult. But like I said, knowledge, like stuff like that, learning that I could have a scone, like one scone wasn't all that bad if I layered it in butter. Like, one of the first times I had a real oh wow moment was I scanned the barcode on the little 7 grams of Kerrygold butter, and it was like 60 calories, and I was like, oh, I used to put like 1.5 of these on one side of my scone and 1.5 on the other. So I'm like, that's 180 calories of butter. Never mind the scone, the marmalades, or the ridiculous fucking shitty atto I got with it. That was a couple of hundred calories. Like, and it was just eye-opening. When I started scanning things, I looked like an idiot. I walked around Tesco. I was just there bleeping things. I only had to get like a jar of milk, but I was still going around bleeping everything.
What do you use, MyFitnessPal?
Yeah. 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 I recommend it to everyone. And like people, and I love when people feel that they can confide in me and ask me questions on Instagram. It's great. But they go, you know, someone told me before that MyFitnessPal gets a bit obsessive and it messes with your head. I'm like, oh, really?
That depends on the person.
Yeah, this is totally like, I adore it. I absolutely love tracking food. Sometimes. Last month, not so much. But even today, I'm back tracking. I'm like, I just like this. I like knowing. And I'm just that kind of person. But and I can't remember exactly who said it before, but a few people have repeated it since. It's like checking your bank budget. If you went on a shopping spree, you'd keep an eye on your mobile app to see exactly what you got, because you don't want to go to the till and be, you know, in the red, like, you know. That's kind of what I am with this. I like to keep a track of it. I like to know how much steps I get in a day. I like to see how much calories I have, what the deficit is. I just like to know. I'm kind of weird like that.
Yeah, but it's something that serves you. Like, that's very much a case of, like, something you mentioned right before we went on air. You pointed to your watch and you're like, I track my steps. It's accountability. Whereas I've never really tracked steps. I'm like, it's not part of my thing, but it's an amazing tool for somebody else. And I want to pull out there, because calories are the game, and it's interesting about the Kerrygold butter, because that's an education thing. That's very much I didn't realize I was eating so many calories. It's not that scones are bad. 10 scones might be bad because they're putting in way too many calories. It's not a scone by itself is bad. Layering it with loads of jam and excess butter, bumping up the calories is bad if weight loss is your goal. And so we have the food. You started tracking that, and MyFitnessPal and your tips with that. What did your workout routines look like? Because this is an interesting one, because when on the face of this, if you hear Steve's weight loss journey, losing 100 pounds in 8 months or over 100 pounds in 8 months, you're like, right, he was killing it at the gym. He was training every day. That's not what you did.
No. Previously, my workouts were a mess. Like, I was training myself, you know, and I'm using the air brackets on that because training is very loosely used here. But I got like really obsessed with strongman. So in my head, I was like, I'm kind of a big fat fella. They're kind of big fat fellas. I'm going to do that sport because I'm shit at darts. So that wasn't going to work for me. And I was like, okay, so this is what they do. This is how they train. They're okay. So I was just lifting really heavy weight for absolutely zero reps, zero sets. And I was just like, nah, done. Whereas then I teamed up with Paul and he sent me on a few workouts just to kind of show me this is what they should look like. I had a general grasp of it. I played sports. I had an idea. You know, I didn't have to Google how to do this or how to do that for the most part. But all of a sudden, I was tired in the gym because I had never done stuff like this. You know, I was doing 3-4, you know, sets of maybe 10s or 12s. And I was going, whew, this is a lot harder than 2 deadlifts. Yeah. But yeah, I think he sent me the first time like 4 sample days. And I was like, right, do you want me to do that? You know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, every day of the week. He goes, no. Whatever works for you, whatever you can manage. If you do 3 days, see how you're feeling, move it up to 4, whatever. But it was simple training. There was nothing mad crazy about it. It was just a case of getting in, doing it right. And it was a real eye-opener because a lot of the weights were quite low. Yeah. And I had for a couple of months thought of myself as, you know, need something lifted. Gotcha. But
Steve Strongman.
That was the goal. Lady Hall, here I come. But I was like, I was tiring and it was weird. It was strange for me because I was really, really tired, but like in a really good way.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just real simple little gym work, low weights for the most part with high sets and reps. And
how long were your workouts taking? Were they short workouts, long workouts?
Yeah, they weren't too bad. They were about 45 minutes maybe.
And then you did steps on top of that.
Yeah, yeah. So the walking thing is, it's been huge and it's so simple. Like,
what do you aim for every day? Or what did you aim for during that time?
At first, 10,000. Because I remember the text from Paul and it said 10K. And I was like, are you for fucking real? You want me to walk 10 kilometers?
That sounds like so much until 1,000. Yeah.
I was like, oh shit, yeah, that makes sense.
What did you think it was?
I thought it was 10 kilometers.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, you want me to go out in one walk and walk 10 kilometers? I was like, you realize exactly the situation I'm in right now. Yeah. I was like, I'm 155 kilos. I don't even own walking shoes. But yeah, it was just such...
Even 10,000 steps sounds like a lot until you're actually moving about.
Yeah, like I've been on holidays for the last week and I was clocking 19. Yeah. And didn't even feel it. It was just, you know, nice days out walking. But I always, and people laugh at me now, because anyone that knows me a couple of years knows I didn't walk, and not from lack of being able, but I just said, like, I have a car. Yeah. If I have to go somewhere, surely this is the most efficient way to get there. Like, I need to go to the shop, but, you know, that'll get me there, and I don't have to carry the shit back.
Yeah.
Whereas I always said, if I didn't have to go somewhere to go, or what was the point of walking a loop? I was like, why? I'm not going anywhere. I'm just coming back to here. Whereas now it's just such an integral part of everything I do. I feel weird. Like this morning, I spent the morning just walking around, just audiobook, music, whatever it is. Like the music makes you feel good. For me anyways, I love cheesy shit songs.
Yeah, I've got the we connect on that. Anytime I put up like Eiffel 65 or some other horse shit, you're like first thing going, yeah, 90s music.
Old 80s ballads. I can't remember which one. I don't know, was it like Def Leppard or something? You put it up once and ever since I always attach it to you. I'm like, I don't know why. Brian doesn't really strike me as a Def Leppard.
Do you like Def Leppard? Anytime I'm training, I've just got the worst playlist though ever. It's like the worst. I have the worst taste in music ever. So
yeah, well, look, it's each their own. But like, the walking for me, like, it was actually you that got me into audiobooks. I didn't even know they were a thing. Didn't know what Audible was, and then one of your podcasts or vloggy bits, I saw years ago, and I was like, I'm gonna give that a go. But the walking, you know, it kind of worked both ways. I got physical exercise in. But I also gave me a chance because I'm a pretty bad reader.
Yeah.
Like I can read perfectly well, but
you consume better through audio. I know from...
Yeah, my patience is very bad.
Yeah.
I just don't have the time to sit... I have loads of time. I just don't make the time to sit down and read.
Yeah.
Whereas if I can double up, like I used to have to drive 3.5 hours, say twice a week, up and down to Kerry. That would have been an audiobook alone, usually 7 or 8 hours.
Yeah.
And going for the walk was a great way for me to kind of flex the intellectual muscle as well. And, you know, I took things on board for them, and now I fly through them. I love it. It's been such a kind of a whirlwind in that sense for me as well, because I never would have prided myself on, you know, reading books or ever said, oh yeah, I read that. Whereas now I'm like, I can actually do that. That's not too bad.
Well, you're hacking dead time. Like, I think that's why podcasts and audiobooks are so... One, that they're growing so exponentially, but also why there's significantly more people who are connecting with it, because you're hacking dead time. If you're walking, you know, I do the same thing on my runs. Sometimes if I have a really long run, I'll put on an audiobook, or in a long drive, like turn your car into a library on wheels. Like, you're going to power through audiobooks that way. We talked about training. We talked about nutrition. One of the things I connect most with you and I love is your mindset. And you clearly had a mindset shift. Talk us through why it took, obviously, your low point in September, you know, that first week of September 2018 and the next 8 months. Was there a light switch moment, or was it a gradual process where your mindset shifted? Because one of the things that Trish said on her podcast when she was speaking about, you know, losing 100 pounds in a year, she was like, it wasn't until she took the accountability back. She was like, that was my problem. She was like, my issue was I wasn't owning it. I wasn't taking responsibility for it. What was your version of that like? Or what was your version of the mindset shift like? Because there's people listening now who are overweight, maybe more than 100 pounds, maybe less than 100 pounds. And they know intellectually what they need to do. As you said, losing weight isn't actually that complicated. It's literally the same as having a budget. As you said, if you've got €2,000 in your account, if you spend more than €2,000 in Boots or €2,000 in Brown Thomas, like, you're going to be in a deficit. You're not going to have any money. And tracking calories is very similar. If you're in a deficit, you'll lose weight. If you're in a surplus, you'll gain weight. What was your mindset shift like? Or what happened to get you from A to B or A to Z in that sense? It might have been a couple of things.
Yeah, I'm going to fangirl first because I love Trish. Absolutely love Trish. But yeah, it was strange. It seems to have happened all of a sudden, but I'd imagine it probably didn't. I'd imagine it was probably a slow burner and then just bang. Like we've spoke a few times about how
the tipping point, it was a lot of things got it there, and then one thing was like, and then it feels like a light switch, but it wasn't. A lot of things got you to that point.
Yeah. Like, I mean, say, like, I suppose for context, I would have always been quite big. So I would have always been the butt of jokes, fat jokes, stuff like that. But the week after that holiday, I came back, I was working, and I wasn't in the conversation. And one of the guys goes, ask Griff, or ask Steve, I can't remember what he said. He looks like he'd know where to eat. They were talking about restaurants. And I was like, what? And I remember that change, because I would have been very soft in the sense that I would have taken it and gone, ha, you're very funny. But then later on, it would have hit me very hard. And that time it was different. That for some reason, that comment made me go, do you know what? No, fuck that guy. And that's when I was like, this is going to happen. So I know that the mindset did change at the right at the start. Like that was literally, I'd say the day or two before I started with Paul. So the mindset had changed straight away. I think it was the decision of, this is what I am. Yes, I'm very overweight. Yes, I am in a position to change it. Because for a long time, I would have blamed you, or him, or them, or anybody else. And I think it was probably a way for me to make myself feel better. I would have blamed shift work. I would have blamed, I don't know, somebody else for bringing chips into work. Or, oh no, he says he's going for pizza. Oh, fuck it, I don't want to be antisocial. Do you know, there's a lot of social norms that go with jobs. And like, I'm not saying that, in fairness, like great lads working with me. But there were certain shifts, you went for chips. It was just a done thing. Yeah. Nobody really questioned why, you just did it. And I did it for a long time. And then I took back that kind of control and that responsibility for myself and said, well, no, actually, I'm going to prep my meal. I'm going to be here. You're going to come back with your food anyways. We're all going to eat it here. It doesn't matter if I'm eating out of Tupperware. You know, I suppose that had a big part to play with it. Taking back the control. And then, like I said, I was listening to a lot of the content and say your stuff resonated a lot. David Goggins resonated a lot. And just, I suppose, looking at myself and realizing that, yeah, I had to change, but nobody else was going to do it for me. If I was going to do this, I had to do it myself with, obviously, other, you know, Paul's help. And
yeah, you've got guides, of course. Yeah, circle nobody does anything by themselves. Me, you, nobody. Yeah. But people are guiding you, because at the end of the day, until you've taken responsibility, nothing can change until you've made a choice or decision.
Yeah, like Paul said it to me a few times. He goes, do or don't. He goes, I'm going to be here and I'll be lean. Or, you know, he'll be lean. But if you want to be in that kind of world yourself, you have to do it. He goes, I'm not going to feed you the shit that you know, that you want to stay in your budget. You have to do it yourself. And I suppose that probably was it, really.
When you got to 340, 340 pounds, 155 kilos, you said the last bit felt like it came on very suddenly. Why or what were your triggers to... Because one of the things Marcus Smith said on this podcast was he was working with somebody in a similar position. I think they were about 400 pounds, very, very overweight. And he was like, he put a kind of a different slant on it. He was like, look, it took a lot for you to get to 400 pounds. Similar that it took a lot for you to get to 340 pounds, 155 kilos. Like, you have to eat so much food. You have to eat to the point where you're past fullness in a lot of places. You're struggling to move, and little basic things are very, very difficult to do. How, for the lack of a better way of phrasing this, how did you get to 155 kilos? What was the, because someone that's sporty, because you have quite a unique story in that sense of your background, and someone that's naturally strong, but you still got very overweight. How did that happen?
That is something I still ask myself, really, because like you said, always been sporty, come from a small village, and if you didn't play football, there was something wrong with you.
Yeah.
Do you know, because that was it. That was the be all and end all. There was that and nothing else. So I always played football. I played rugby when I got older. But then, you know, I just began to stop. So I trained once a week, not twice. And then next thing, I didn't go. And next thing, it was a month, and then I was going, oh, screw it, sure, I'll go back next season. You know, that kind of stuff started to creep in. We played Astro at work, and I could feel it. I actually physically felt it in my body, where I was gaining the weight, and you know, the legs got really sore, or I couldn't get as many steps in. Like 155 kilos playing four or five aside, it's fucking difficult. And one of the first things when I lost weight was when I was playing, say it was actually like eight or nine aside, I was like, I can move a shitload more now. And you know, the step tracker was going fucking crazy, kind of thinking I was like tying it to a dog and going, go. But I don't know, I think I had a lot of like triggers.
So it was a combination of not moving and obviously diet.
Yeah, diet went...
Talk about the triggers.
yeah, I had a lot of triggers. Like I said, I was always kind of the butt of jokes, but always kind of wore this mask of it's not bothering me. Then I'd get home, plonk myself on the couch, watch my favorite things on telly, and just eat whatever, Uber Eats, anything. I just get food delivered. I'd eat Ben and Jerry's. I'd be on the drive home from work going, geez, I feel like shit. And it was like a vicious cycle because I felt like shit. I ate like shit. I gained weight. I'd look in the mirror, didn't like what I see, felt, you know, down about it. I don't want to paint it like I was really unhappy and stuff, but I was unhappy with where
at
I was.
That particular point, but that particular quadrant of life, yeah.
Yeah, and I'd look at myself, didn't like it, but instead of taking the responsibility to change it, I'd go have a bit of a pity party on the couch. I'd watch sports. I'd find any excuse to get a takeaway. I'd find a film or a soccer match. Like, I remember watching like Bundesliga 2 and being like, yeah, closet Dusseldorf fan. And just ordering like a share size pizza with garlic bread and cheesy things. And I'm like, you know, looking back, I'm like, it's pretty fucking obvious where the calories came from. But at the time, I kind of looked for, I suppose, feel good foods.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I attached
feel good foods. Short-term feel-good foods. Yeah, because...
You know, nobody ever ate broccoli, you know, to go, oh, this feels great.
Yeah.
Like, Ben and Jerry's. Yeah. You know, and that's what I did. I looked for happiness at the bottom of a tub of Ben and Jerry's, and it wasn't freaking there, as nice as fish food is.
Yeah, it is, and it is good. And again, it's the amount, the quantity, how many times a week you're having it. What does your diet look like now?
Do you know, it isn't totally dissimilar, and that's one of the real beauties of... For me, for counting calories, I haven't had to cut anything out. I haven't said I can never eat pizza again. I can never eat chocolate again. I can never do this again. I can have it, but I'm much savvier about it. Like I said, I was on holidays for a few days and okay, I ate a lot. Like they have delicious foods. And like I was saying to you, my missus asked me, can we go get cake for breakfast? I'm like, yes. Yes, we can. Why couldn't we? We're on holidays in a country that does unbelievable baking. But I'd still drink Pepsi Max. I'd drink a Coke Zero because I learned very fast that liquid calories were really dangerous. And for me personally.
So easy to consume so many of them.
Well, I drank a lot of coffee. And for some reason, I drank not the stupid ones, but the really, really calorific ones.
Yeah, some of them are like, you can go up to 1,000 calories. I'm talking some of them.
Dinner.
Yeah.
Like, I know there's certain coffee chains, and at Christmas time, especially Christmas, Halloween, they do like fucking unicorn, gingerbread, whatever. And you're huge calories, but I was drinking these. I was drinking 4 or 5 lattes a day. And then I was guzzling like a liter of Coke. So like all of a sudden I was at like 1,200, 1,500 calories.
Before you've eaten any food.
Exactly. So all of a sudden, no, the picture of why I gained weight so fast is really clicking in. But now it's much the same. Like I eat my lunch and dinner pretty much every day. Breakfast is a coin toss. It's just not a meal. I'm really interested. It bores me a bit.
Talk me about breakfast. Because breakfast is a very funny one. And I haven't touched on it on the podcast that often. But you particularly got some hate on your comment about skipping breakfast. Talk us through that.
Yeah, I came on this podcast and I was like, I might get a follow out of this. I'm going to end up getting unfollowed by a shitload of people.
The breakfast lovers, you're safe enough on this podcast. The people that listen, in fairness, know that context matters. Yeah. So, and anyone that doesn't is like, what the fuck are they talking about?
Exactly. Look, never really been a breakfast fan.
Yeah.
It kind of bores the shit out of me. Like, really, for breakfast, most people eat something similar every day, and that's just kind of boring. It's not like lunch or dinner where you can mix it up like crazy. And I can kind of do without. And like I said, I took a pretty aggressive approach at it for the first couple of months. And Paul was like, look, if you can do it, that's fine. But is it sustainable? And I'm like, well, yeah, I can very easily not eat breakfast. And I shared a thing on Instagram. I've shared it twice, mostly because I don't give a shit. But I shared it the first time, and I got a little bit of stick. And then a little while after, I suppose, maybe the following, I got a little bit bigger and there was more people to hate on it. But I got absolute tired.
What was it? What was the post?
I literally said that breakfast wasn't essential. That was the height of it. And people were like, it's so essential. It's needed for this. It's needed for growth. It sparks your metabolism. It's good for your head. I'm like, I never said any of those things weren't true. I just said, I don't like fucking breakfast. I don't like cornflakes.
Yeah.
Take it easy there.
But that's, people get mad. Breakfast is... one of those, diet is, can be very dogmatic for people, full stop, and people are very, I won't say hooked on the idea of breakfast. It's very much a not understanding like how much context matters with people. I'm like, if particularly with losing weight, you know, I get that quite a lot. You know, I put up my Instagram stories today, somebody goes, skipping study show, skipping breakfast helps you lose weight. And I'm like, okay, what fucking studies show that? I'm like, I'm sure there are. I'm like, there's also studies that show that skipping breakfast makes you put on weight. Like, it all comes down to calories. I'm like, if skipping that breakfast puts you into a calorie deficit, it's going to help you lose weight. If skipping that breakfast leads you to overeating later in the day because you're hungry, puts you out of a calorie deficit, it'll make you put on weight. Like, context matters. And it's very much a what works for you. Like, what can you stick to? What's sustainable? What can you adhere to? And clearly, from what you're doing, you're someone that does better without breakfast. There'll be other people listening who are exactly like that. And there'll be other people listening who are like, no, I need that meal to set up my day. And for those people, I'm like, yeah, then that's what you do. And then there's everything in between. Alternating intermittent fasting on different days. Having breakfast every day. Never having breakfast. It all works in context. There's no one meal that makes you fat or skinny. There's no one food that makes you fat or skinny. It's context. It's your overall calories. It's your diet. And it's the amount of those foods that you're eating and what meal choices you're making overall. And I think it's worth adding that in just to kind of give a nutritionist standpoint on it. Because I'm like telling you, as someone that's got qualifications coming out my ears on that, I'm like, it depends on the person. Like, studies will show different things. You can find a study for anything. Welcome to the internet. Like,
I love when a thing starts with studies show. It's like, I heard one before. It was like, studies show that the dog shit diet makes you lose weight. If you eat nothing but dog shit 3 times a day, you lose weight. That doesn't mean Sharon down the road is going to do it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be a great idea. Right, but studies show it.
But the thing, the analogy I always use just to bounce off you there is, because we talked about bars and shake diets earlier, and I've tried to explain on this podcast in the past, and I'm going to throw it to you now, because you talked about 900 calories. You drink the three shakes and an optional snack bar. If you're 340 pounds eating 900 calories, you will lose weight 100%. But you could also lose that weight by eating 900 calories worth of a Mars bar, the Mars bar diet. It is the same thing. Like, nutritionally, they're not completely dissimilar. There's a little bit, probably more vitamins and minerals in those shakes because they charge extortionate prices for them. But in principle, it's the same thing. And understanding that basic concept of calories in, calories out for weight loss, then you're like, should I skip breakfast? Should I skip dinner? Should I do fasting? Should I have Ben and Jerry's every night? You know, maybe you can. Can you factor it into your calories? It's just context matters massively. I didn't mean to go off on a rant on that, but it's worth saying the studies show the dog shit diet, the Mars bear diet. Like, you can get a study to support any claim. Like, there's so many things going on at a genetic level, epigenetic level, personal level, behavioral level, that you have to test things. Like, was breakfast something you would have eaten all the time before working with Paul? Because you heard you should have breakfast. White bread was an example, but was breakfast another one?
Yeah, well, I suppose white bread kind of was breakfast. It was toast, because like, I just don't like cereals. Yeah. They bore the crap out of me. And then you hear, and again, it was a lot of baseless people's opinions. You know, such and such is a bad breakfast choice because it's full of sugar. It's not filling. Such and such. I love porridge. I do. But there's only so much you can do with it. You know, every now and again, I might throw like a Kinder Bueno finger into it and I mix it in and it's great. Oh, Kinder, but I can't eat that every morning. Yeah. You know, I just get bored of that as well.
Talk about, you made a really good point there, and I want to kind of touch on that. I don't want to say unsolicited advice from people. Talk about listening to advice from people, and the phrase I normally use is, why are you listening to somebody you wouldn't switch places with? Talk about where your head and mindset was at. And I reference this a lot on my channels, that you might have the best, amazing best friend in the world, you know, Sharon down the street, but she's four stone overweight or offering you diet advice. She might be amazing at telling you how to balance your checkbook or, you know, show up in a relationship. She's fucking four stone overweight. Don't be listening to her for diet advice. Talk me through, because you mentioned it there. Was that something that you did, or was that something that your mindset was kind of conditioned by? Talk me through that a little bit on what your experience was with it.
Yeah, I don't know, was it a self-esteem thing that I didn't believe in myself enough, or maybe I didn't know enough? I believed everybody's opinion on everything in terms of fitness. Do you know, and I'm quite I love wise. I don't know, does it come with my job or what, but I love just wise. I need to know nowadays, now I need to know. Whereas before, somebody would say, such and such is good for you, and I go, okay, that's good for me. Like I said at the start, so I read somewhere, I saw somewhere about the coconut oil in coffee, and I was like, okay, that's good for me. And I started putting my coffee in. After a while, I was like, this just tastes a little bit slimy. Yeah, and smells nice, but it tastes slimy. And then I messaged Paul, and he's like, yeah, why are you doing it? I'm like, because it's good for you. And he's like, why is it good for you? Why are you doing it? I'm like, oh, shit. But I took just advice from everybody. No matter, like, again, like the guy that made the restaurant comment, the food comment, he would have been one of those, shouldn't be drinking that.
You know, with everyone offers opinions on everything.
People are just like that. Yeah. It's like people think that, you know, they read something in a snippet of a weekend magazine, health and fucking wellness something, and now all of a sudden they're a PT or they're a fucking doctor in nutrition or some shit. That happened a lot. But the best one was the day I was running on a treadmill. And this is months after. This is like when I had started losing the weight. Somebody tapped me on the shoulder as I'm running, which nearly, do you know the Lucas Aidad where he comes flying off and it starts that was like that close to happening. And he goes, are you the fella that lost a bit of weight? I was like, oh, yeah. He goes, do you mind me asking how you did? And I was like, okay, not the best time, but I have no problem. So I was like covered in sweat. I was panting. And he goes, yeah, I think you should be eating more fish. It's like, what? I was like, you stopped me running in the middle of a training session to ask me what I'm eating just to tell me that I'm eating wrong. I was like, thank you. I don't know. How the fuck do you react in a situation like that? Because the guy, I don't know, was he coming from a good place on this or was he just trying to give his opinion? But I was like, you're not massively fit looking. Yeah. You know, without judging a book by its cover, I was like, why are you coming over telling me I should eat more fish? Like, what's good about fish? All the oils. I was like, that's not an answer. Yeah. So broad. I was like, well, why? And, you know, stuff like that just happens. I don't think it matters if you're 155 kilos or whatever I was then, 120, 115. People are going to give them how you take them on board. Like I was saying earlier, like my circle changed so much. I listened to everybody's advice. I had this huge, huge circle. And then all of a sudden it got really small. And it wasn't even people that were around me the whole time. Like you were in that circle and I hadn't met you at that stage, I don't think. You know, and there was other podcasts and people like, you know, Paul, and people that I genuinely believed knew what they were talking about and had your best interest at heart. You know, my circle fell to 5 or 6 people. And all of a sudden, other people's opinions on my diet or how I was training didn't really register with me. Whereas before, if someone was like, oh, you know, you're doing your bench press wrong, if he had a six pack, I'd be like, he has to know. Yeah. He has to know about training. Look at the shape he's in. I've come to realize that might not be true. You know, not always. Not always.
What's your protocol for figuring out who those people are that you listen to?
I suppose I ask myself, do they give a shit? Like, about me, not about my training. Like, does this person have my best interest at heart? Are they saying this to show that, you know, air quotes, they know better? Or in some sort of attempt to maybe, not quite show off, but just show that, oh, they read an article once in bodybuilding.com's website.
Yeah, superiority bias is a big thing.
You know,
yeah.
Or is it a parent or a girlfriend or a brother or a best mate who's kind of genuinely concerned about you? You know, there's a huge divide there between the guy that taps you on the shoulder from behind whilst you're running on a treadmill at 12 kilometers an hour and, you know, your loved one, your mother, your father. You know, that I had to find the line, and in hindsight, it wasn't that fucking hard, you know?
Similar to the mindset shift, because this is something that I connect with, because I would have done something similar, where I always find, and I spoke about this, for those actually unfamiliar, you were one of my proofreaders for my new book, so thank you for that. You I've given you a signed copy right before this podcast. But one of the things I put in the new book is, like, the confidence, you know, self-doubt and confidence, and I use the analogy like it... like a seesaw. I'm like, the more confident you are in what you're doing, the less self-doubt you have and the less people you ask. I'm like, you can tell how confident someone is with their belief system by how many people they ask for their opinion. And I talk about the story in the book on, you know, when I was single and asking all my other fucking lad single friends what they thought of this girl, and they'd pick holes at her. And I'm like, yeah, because they're the people to ask how to get a relationship off the ground. And it never goes away. Like, I got it this morning in the gym, Steve. I was in the gym this morning. I had a guy come over to me, and I kind of know him. And he came over to me offering me business advice. And he works for fucking Altwood or some fucking cyber company. And I was like, oh, yeah? Yeah, he was like, yeah, you should do this training program for this client. It'd be really, really good. I'm like, all right, cool, thanks. Like, cheers. I was like, if I need help with my software and my computer, I'll give you a shout. Like, you know, but, and it never goes away. Like, I don't, the reason I say that is because you got it before, you still get it now. And I'm at the stage where I do quite well. I make an amazing living doing what I do. I love what I do.
and I still get unsolicited advice from people. I'm like, someone that's never lived it, walked that path, doesn't know you on a personal level, that never goes away. So for those listening, it's about putting this plan and a system in place now, like Steve said, who's got your best interest at heart, probably merged with who's actually knowledgeable in their field. Like, you know, I don't go to my barber to get accounting advice. I go to my accountant, you know. It's, I don't ask people that I want to learn about business from. I make sure they're people who are reputable in business, etc. So I think that's kind of a helpful tool to have in your arsenal. When it comes to where you're at now, you're up about 10, about 9 kilos from your peak weight. Talk me through how you handle, because as someone that knows you on a personal level, it's literally only a matter of time. Like, me and Paul have referenced you so often in private conversations, on the podcast as well, but in private conversations about Steve is the winner's mindset, what I call the winning mindset. I'm like, Steve is going to win. I'm like, he's going to lose the weight. He's already made the decision. It's just waiting for time to catch up. But it's not a linear process of, you know, 155 kilos, 150 kilos, 130 kilos, 100 kilos, 90 kilos, etc. Whatever the end goal is over time. How do you handle the going from 340 pounds, 155 kilos to your peak to 115 now? How does your mindset go, and how do you stay positive and focused? Because for me, I'm looking at it and going, this is part of the journey. I've seen people on a similar journey and understanding that micro failures are just feedback for what you can do going forward. But it can also break other people. Some people have an idea in their head that they want to be, you know, 100 kilos, and they actually go the other way and add 5 kilos, and they freak out and just lose the plot completely and press the fucking button and normally end up rebounding back worse. How do you stop that happening?
I suppose, like you said, there's a distinction between, you know, failing and complete failure. There's an incredible amount of learning. And when you learn that, well, when you learn that you can learn from something going a little bit wrong, or, you know, maybe taking the wrong fork in the road, it's like if you go off the motorway at the wrong junction, you know, if you go one too late, you can loop around, you can come back. It's not that it might take you 20 minutes longer, but you can come back. And for me, like, say the best example has been the last, maybe, like I said it this morning on a post, like the last 2 months for me have been a bit topsy-turvy. Like, and probably more so than the last 18 months, they've been the two that have been the most up and down. I had an ankle injury. I had a tendon injury in my ankle. In May it happened. They thought there was a break. They put me in a boot.
Yeah, I remember that.
And yeah, we do. Yeah, because you jumped on me down on the...
Yeah, I remember that day. Yeah, that was the first day we met.
And they're like, I'm hobbling away. Yeah. And next thing, Brian comes from the distance like, yeah, and jumps up. And I'm like,
I totally forgot all my social etiquette because I'd realized we hadn't met in person, but I felt like I knew you and I jumped on top of you. And I'm like, right, you had a big fucking boot in your foot. I'm like, oh shit, I'm after breaking his foot. 85 kilo fucking man jumping on you.
We managed. We're still here. We're talking.
Yeah, true.
But I got put in that boot, and it turns out it wasn't a break, it was a tendon injury, and that only really came to light after I started running, because the pain was horrendous at times. So went about trying to get that fixed, physiotherapy. Physio told me to ease off on the miles. So a lot of my training in the recent, maybe since the end of summer, have been running. I hated running. Like, I didn't even like to walk. I remember running, but for some reason I got really into it, because I think I always told myself I couldn't, so I didn't. But now I look at it and I go, well, I told myself I couldn't. Like, I take hate and negativity, and I try and channel it as positive as I can, even if it came from old me. Like, old me said I couldn't do it. Well, new me's going to go fucking watch me. And the miles kind of started aggravating the injury. I then found out I was allergic to elastoplast.
Oh, so it made it way worse.
Oh, yeah. I had a half marathon, and I got the elastoplast. So, like, my foot got really, really bad, and about the entirety of my sole was like a blister. So I ran the half on that. And like for 2 weeks I couldn't walk, but I was just a stubborn bollocks, and I was like, I'm fucking running it, I'm getting the medal, and that's it. But then December came, and like I have like a really kind of core set of values, like family and spending time with them. There's a lot of kids in the family. I love spending time with them, because you kind of realize like these people aren't around forever. Yeah. And you don't know what your Christmas table or your Christmas is going to like look like next year. You don't know who's going to be there, who's not, you know, touch wood, everyone will be there. But I try to enjoy it as much as I can. Because one of the first things Paul said to me, because we started at the end of the year, well, September, was it doesn't matter what you do between Christmas and New Year's, it matters what you do from New Year's to Christmas.
Yeah.
And it, that kind of, it's not just about that though. It's like, I have a birthday in 2 weeks. If I start dieting today, or dieting, you know, tracking again today, would I freak out on my birthday because I have a slice of cake and a nice dinner? Like, it, that just doesn't happen to me anymore.
Yeah.
But like I said, the last 2 months, up and down weight, not running as much because of the issues with my ankle and my foot, but...
You're adjusting around it.
Just staying around it and enjoying it. You know, like, I decided to lose weight because I wanted a better quality of life. I didn't say I wanted to lose weight to, for the rest of my life, track calories and be afraid of what I was eating. So I was away on a holiday in the snow with my missus, and I loved it. And I kind of spent every minute over there enjoying it, not worrying that this delicious, you know, Polish cake had a billion calories, but just loving every minute there, because they're the kind of memories that you you remember these things. You won't remember in 20 years what you had for breakfast in December, you know, because you had a 300 calorie porridge with a stick of feckin' Kinder Bueno in it. Big whoop, not the biggest thing in the world, whereas I remember that holiday. So I suppose, like that, you know, I'm not saying that it's not the important thing, but you have to prioritize as well. You can't spend the whole time worrying. Like, I would have been one of those people that would have worried quite a bit, and especially for the first little while, that I go off track.
Worried about
that I go off track,
yeah,
and that old me'd creep back in. Whereas I don't know now, is it habitual? Is it the learning, the knowledge that I've got from, say, Paul and books and everything like that? But I know that, like, today I could flick the light switch and okay, back at it. But you learn those things from failing and being able to bounce back into it.
One of the things that anytime I'm ever working with anybody in weight loss, and I don't do as much extreme weight loss as Paul, I tend to send my people to Paul when they're, you know, 350 pounds, 400 pounds. I'm like, Paul is your person to go to for that. I don't generally work directly with that clientele, just because he's a better fit for the most part. But one of the things I love about Paul's mythology, and I think you embody it as well, is that, like, life can't be one big diet. For those, and I, as someone that has never struggled with weight to that degree, definitely, like, I empathize 100% with it from other areas, because I've had other struggles, but it was never a weight struggle per se. But when you're 340 pounds, is losing weight something you're always thinking about? Or is it something that's always on the back of your mind? Or is weight something that's always at the forefront of your mind? Because now, and the reason I ask that question is because I'm wondering, was there a shift between old you and new you, in the sense that when you go away with your missus, you can prioritize that and enjoy that and realize that, right, you eat extra calories while you're away, walk extra steps. You know, life's about getting the balance right. It's not about being on one big diet. It's like, even if it was and you lost all the weight and you got your ideal weight, if it comes at the expense of everything else in your life, your job, your relationship, your happiness, your fulfillment, all that, I'm like, all right, would you make that trade-off? Most people would say no, rightly so. Was yours, between old you and new you, was that something that was a concern? Did you focus on it? And that prioritization now, where you realize that if you have a setback, that's all it is. It's a micro failure. Is that something that did a 180? Or... were you always good with that? You just never really thought about the weight loss. I'm curious, because it's I know it's quite a in-depth and layered question, but I'm curious what, for the reason I ask it, for those that are listening who see life as one big diet. You know, one of the things I used to tell my clients, not so much who are extremely overweight, but people who are overweight enough that they were like, I want to lose a stone, I want to lose a couple of stone. I would ask them, you know, what cost do you want to lose it at? I'm like, do you want to lose it over the long term? Do you want to lose it sustainably? Why do you want to lose it? I'm like, do you want to lose it because you want numbers on a scale to be lower? Or do you want to lose it because you want to improve your quality of life? And I think that why is important. Yours, your version of that. Was that always the way you did it, old you and new you? Or is that a very new Steve thing?
Yeah, there's a distinct difference from the way I was and the way I am now. So say at first, I was very worried about weight, purely because I had that sudden realization of size, and just like my stomach was just, it was huge, like it was. And I was saying to you earlier, like the first time Paul asked me to weigh myself, I actually couldn't find a scale. I stood on the scale in the gym I was a member in, and it was one of those old mechanical ones that tips, and when he went to 140 kilos.
So you couldn't even weigh yourself?
Oh, I maxed out, like way tipping over the other side.
You're like, I'm 140 kilos, yes!
Yeah, I was like, great. But that time, I was quite worried about weight because that was my metric, that was what I had. I couldn't walk into a clothes shop at that stage. Like, at 155 kilos, I actually couldn't buy a t-shirt in you know, your normal sports shop, your normal clothes shop. I had to order online, which was like the worst thing ever because I could ignore it. I could buy clothes online that was 3XL, 4XL, whatever you needed, it was there. Whereas, you know, now I can do that, thankfully. I can walk in and I wear skinny jeans on purpose.
Yeah.
I they're not just skinny because my legs are really fat.
Yeah.
You know, I do this because I can. And I get quite a lot of flack for it. But I have different metrics now. You know, like I used to get really tired just walking up a staircase and there's 12 steps in my house.
Yeah.
And like I used to be fucked. Like I'd get to the top of the stairs, and especially in work. In work there was a like a spiral type thing with like four sets of steps. And I would have to stop at the top and I either pretend to check my phone or to chat to the person that was with me, like, oh, see that out there? Because I was absolutely gassed. And for somebody that played sports, this was like, I don't know how it happened so bad. Whereas now, you know, like yesterday even, I put on a t-shirt and I was like, this is a little snugger than it maybe should be. Like, I didn't weigh myself this morning. I know I've put on a few pounds because of the holiday and Christmas and stuff. But I put on a t-shirt and I went, this is a little snugger than it should be. Okay. Like, I didn't feel the need to maybe attach happiness or unhappiness with a number on a scale, because like I've heard you say before, it fluctuates so much. And I remember there was one day there with Paul, and I just did it for the crack, weighed myself in the morning, weighed myself when I got home. I played football that evening, and I did the same thing the next day, almost the same thing, same shift, and I played football. But like the kg difference on a scale from the start of one day to the day after at the end was huge. But if I attached happiness to that, I would have been really delighted. And then when I drank a little bit of water, I've been like, oh man, I gained so much weight overnight. You know, so you have to be very careful when you're attaching personal feeling just to the scale. Do you know, like I have t-shirts now. And
did
I,
you do that before?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember when I did get the scale and I saw 155, it was like 155 point something. I was genuinely unhappy. And I remember I used to stand in my grandparents' bathroom. They had a scale in the corner that went up to like 21 stone. And I remember seeing him feeling really bad, but never doing anything about it because I didn't know what to do. I didn't know who to contact or whatever. All that went through my head, that was Ghostbusters. And I was like, but
who are you going to call?
Paul Dermody.
Nice plug for Paul there.
But, you know, it's just, I've learned since that there are so many other things to value in terms of happiness than just the little number that pops up on your digital scale, because that can change over the course of the day. Hydration. I know you were talking about it before. For women, it's different.
Yeah, hormonal based on the time of the month.
If you got to go to the bathroom. You know, like there's little things that can add to it or take away from it. So like, no, I don't really, I try my damnedest not to attach happiness to a number. But it can, it can happen. It's kind of natural. If you step on it, you don't like it.
You'll go into default mode, yeah.
But I suppose, again, it's how you take it. I like to think that I'm quite systematic in approaches towards things. This is the problem. That's what I want. The bit in the middle is how I fix it. You know, what's the best approach? What's the second best approach? You know, it's, I know some people say having a plan B is a bad idea because if you have a plan B, you don't think plan A is going to work. Yeah. It doesn't fucking hurt. It doesn't hurt to be able to go, okay, look, this didn't work. I still have this to fall back on. And I just kind of try my hardest, you know, in that sense.
Yeah, self-awareness is key on that because I tend to not have a plan B for that exact reason, because I can default similar to, I don't default to a number on a scale, but I'll default to plan B if I give myself that. But that's self-awareness on the person. Last question, Steve. I'm very curious, and it may be what you've talked about or it may be something different. What's the biggest difference between old you and new you?
Mindset. Outlook. Yeah, it's well, 100 pounds.
but that's an external reflection of how you've internally been thinking over the last 18 months.
It's, for a long time, I believed I couldn't do things. Now I look at things and say, you can do that if you want. You know, like I've signed up for a run that I'm not completely and utterly sure if I can, but I'm going to fucking try. Whereas a long time ago, I would have gone, fuck, that's for other people. That's for, you know, nut jobs like you that run through snow and snakes. Or scorpions.
They're fucking snakes too, the cunts. I'm terrified of snakes.
I take my chances out running a scorpion. Snakes. But it's outlook. It's I can't put one finger on it. It's in my head. Everything. The biggest change for me has been in my head, not physically, because the minute I changed my head, my body was going to catch up. And I knew that, and Paul said it to me repeatedly, but I actually believed him. You know, whereas, you know, you could have met me in May that year and told me, you're going to lose weight, we're going to do it. And I would have gone, okay. And then I just wouldn't have texted you back.
Yeah.
I would have been fucking, I'm not losing weight, I like pizza too much.
Yeah.
Whereas now I see challenges and I actually think I can do it. And after the last, and this is not to sound cocky, but I know I can. So like today, I know I can get back in a deficit. I know I can lose a few pounds again. It's, I don't have that self-doubt. I have that bit of confidence back, and I'm kind of back to being myself, because for a long time when I was that heavy, I just wasn't really who I am. I wasn't the chatty, self-confident, borderline, maybe touching on arrogance. Whereas now I feel like I'm back to that.
Yeah.
Do you know, and I'm happy in that sense as well. And it's just a nice place to be.
Well, that confidence is everything. Like, believing that you can do something, believing that any limitation you've created is your own, for the lack of a better term. Oh, Steve, I love this conversation. So much value here. For everybody listening, you're very good at documenting things, particularly on Instagram. Where's the best place for people listening to follow you? And I'll link it up in the show notes at the bottom and in today's episode in the description and on BrankyFitness.com. Where can people follow your journey, connect with you, contact you? Let us know.
I'm on Instagram. It's Steve's Weight Loss with underscores in between the words. And yeah, that's, I like to talk a little bit of shit on my Instagram.
You do. Your Instagram is great. I love your Instagram. It's so good. Steve, thank you so much for this. For everybody listening, I will link up Steve's Instagram in the show notes. 100%. Go follow him regardless, but especially if you're on a weight loss journey. I would just follow him for the crack. Like, you send me gifts and memes that just fucking make me crack up. I love it. So I'm very grateful for our friendship and for that. Steve, thank you so much again.
Thanks, Brian.